We're going to do this evening is we're moving into the third section of David's children, and this idea tonight is going to be focusing on the outcome of events. This is Absalom's exile, so just to put things back in perspective, there were two children of David who were in friction. That was Amnon and Tamar. Amnon ultimately violently raped Tamar. Her brother, Absalom, ultimately kills Amnon in revenge, and we're left there. We're in a terrible state of affairs within the entire family. And now is when, after Absalom kills, this is when he flees. So we're going to focus on Absalom's absence tonight and how David HaMelech deals with that, how he doesn't deal with that. That's going to be our focus this evening. If you have the text of Tanakh, I really apologize. There are extra copies which are floating around, but I don't see them here. So I think I must have left the extra copies at home of the actual Tanakh itself. We are actually going to be in Perek Yud Gimel Lamed Aleph to Lamed Gimel right now. This is the first stage. Sorry, Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Lamed Dalet to Lamed Tes. Here it is. If you don't have it inside, that's fine too. Vayivrach Avshalom vayisa ha'nar ha'tzofeh eseino vayar v'yinei amrav holchim miderech acharov mitzad ahar. So Avshalom flees. The onlooker, the watchman, sees that there are many people following him from the mountain. Vayomir Yonadav l'melech, hinei b'nei ha'melech bo'ub kidvar avdecha kein haya. So Yonadav, who's the friend of Amnon, now says, look, the sons of the king are returning, because the rumor that had been spreading was that Avshalom had murdered all of the children of the king, and that was not the fact. It was a rumor. So Yonadav is now confirming the fact that it was only Amnon who was killed. As he talks in through the gate, walk all the rest of the princes. Everybody breaks down crying for the terrible loss of Amnon's cold-blooded murder. This is what happens. Ula Avshalom, va'Avshalom barach. In the meantime, Avshalom escapes. Vayelech el Talmai, ve'abelech geshur, vayisabel al benoi kol hayamim. Avshalom runs to the area of Geshur, the king of Geshur, and the king mourns for his son all days. Avshalom barach vayelech Geshur. Avshalom is moved to the area of Geshur. Vayisham shalosh shanim, is there for 3 years. Vatachal David Amelech latzeis el Avshalom. And David HaMelech stops going after Avshalom kinicham al Amnon kimeis, because he was comforted, or something had changed inside of him because he was dead. This is the text itself. So let's try to analyze what's going on over here. There's a lot of difficult things to understand within the context of this immediate parasha. One, I think, very basic thing just to appreciate is that the place that Avshalom finds refuge. So Geshur happens to be a very important place in Avshalom's life. Why is that? Because if we remember back to the lineage of each of the children of David, Avshalom is a product of David's third marriage, and he is actually married to a princess of Geshur. So that means to say that his mother is a convert from the neighboring kingdom of Geshur. Now, where is Geshur? So this is actually very important. This is very timely in the news today. If you take a look at the map on the top of page 6, this is a map of the conquered territories. You'll see in the central area is Israel. So there's Israel, the Dead Sea, pretty much in the center to the lower regions. If you move up northwards, you see the Kinneret, which is the other sea. To the right of the Kinneret is a word, Geshur, in question marks. So where is that today politically? That's the Golan Heights. So it happens to be, it's interesting, that Geshur was one of the territories which they had trouble conquering at the times of Yahushua. They had the area of Bashan. Bashan is the Golan Plus area, which was really actually given to Menashe, the tribe of Menashe. But they couldn't fully conquer it. Geshur and Ma'acha were actually enclaves which were left unconquered. And this is, they obviously had a political partnership or a subservience. Geshur is a subservient to David HaMelech, which is why David HaMelech is marrying one of the princesses of Geshur. Nonetheless, when Avshalom is seeking refuge, he goes back north to Geshur in refuge. Okay, that's just an interesting point. They do make note on this map on the bottom left corner in the Sinai, they also have Geshurites with a question mark. I'm not sure where that originates from, because generally speaking, when you read through the Torah, Bamidbar, Lamedalad, you go through the borders of Israel, you bump into Geshur, and you read in Sefer Yehoshua, you bump into Geshur in the northern territories. So that's what we're referring to over here. Anyways, just understand what's happening here. So now Avshalom is out of the picture. One of the most complicated things that we see about this whole episode over here is David HaMelech's reaction. So we're told, what's David HaMelech's ultimate long-lasting reaction here? Is he mourns. In fact, it says he mourns for his son all days. Now, by the way, this is a little bit of an ambiguous phrase. In which sense?
Which son?
Because it's not clear which son it is. Now, generally speaking, when you have a pronoun, not a proper noun, when you have a pronoun in a sentence, and there's no indicator as to what the pronoun is referring to, you usually go back to the previous pronoun. So in this sentence, we're told that Avshalom goes to Geshur, and David HaMelech mourns his son for all his days. His son would, if we were following the regular constraints of English pronoun identification, would refer to Avshalom. At the same time, Avshalom isn't the one he should be mourning for, it should be Amnon, who's dead. So I think there is space for this ambiguity to actually give rise to the complexity of David Melech's feelings here. Meaning to say, these are both his sons. They're both his sons, the one he loves and the one he loves, but they one hurt the other one. So this is going to actually lead us into this complexity of his emotions. And I think the Pasuk is specifically vague to show us that complexity. Yes, Dina?
So you could have known all the day.
Okay, so let's dig a little further into this. Let's assume that the mourning is for, in fact, like the real mourning for a dead, for a lost person, right? So if that's the case, then that would mean to say that David HaMelech is mourning incessantly for Amnon. Now, actually, at this point in time, it actually reminds me, and I have to apologize when we started this, is that I want to thank Autumn, who's sponsoring this tonight's share. This is actually reaching the Shloshim for Mr. Walter Lido right now, as we arrive at this point, a very, very special time. And specifically at this point, we think about a continued Aliyah Shloshim for all the tremendous things the Mishpacha are doing. And for Michael and Karen Rosenblum, who are also sponsoring tonight, we'll initiate us tonight for Mrs. Harriet Rosenblum, who's your site, is also coming in right now. So two very special moments to be celebrating our Torah learning, and specifically relating to mourning. So he has one of the complications when it comes to mourning, is that a person is not supposed to have incessant mourning. It's not a healthy thing to be caught in this, what we're seeing with David HaMelech. It reminds us a little bit like Yaakov Avinu, right? Yaakov couldn't really fully. It was so painful to him. And again, it was also with a son. But here's something interesting. It's not only is that the truth, but it's even worse, because we know that David HaMelech is a person who is able to break himself out of mourning for a son. And how do we know that? Because he already lost a son, right? He lost an infant child, and he prayed and fasted and the whole business for the 7 days the child was around. At the end, what does he do? Gets up and he says, am I going to bring the child back? So now, okay, good. So the Mefarshim struggle with this, and the Mefarshim actually now sort of enrich our understanding of what's really going on over here. And so Abar Benel and the Ralbag both address the specific issue. Here's the way they word it. Let's take a look at source 27 for a brief moment. The Abar Benel says in this, in the end of the first line where that little period is, he says, V'im heyois she'omar David kishemeis ha'yelad asher yodo rishona bas sheva. When his first child from Bathsheba passes away, Rachman and Litzlan, Shein Royal is Abel Almes, and he says, nah, we should not, this is not the time for mourning now. He gets up and he goes on. I'm going to think about him, I'm going to go to walk to him, but he's not coming back. So David HaMelech seemed to snap out of it then. So he says, he changed his clothes, he showered, he got on, but he couldn't do that by Amnon's death. Aval, he's a bell of Yamin Rabim. Veralbal Kosa Shalagina, Shalagina, Shemaki, Kiim, Hatvilavatsom, Ala Yeradames, Lachayosoi Poal Botel, Avaladagovayagon, Loidiber, Mimenu Shoma. So, what the Ralbag does, and we're not going to learn inside, but he's quoting the Ralbag, is that there's a difference between active, which are sort of trying to change things, and then the feeling of grief. Meaning, yes, David HaMelech said, I'm not going to actively continue to fast and pray, because those are trying to actively change Hashem's mind. That's not effective anymore. He says, but that doesn't stop the feelings, the natural human feelings. And what is being expressed in Avelos isn't an expression of change, of trying to change Hashem. It's an expression of human grief. David HaMelech is still experiencing that as he's a normal human being. That is that there is space, so that's what Rabag says. The Abarbanel rejects this, and he says, "Ein kein dati." If he was showering, if he was getting up, it sounds like he doesn't even have grief, right? He's moving on. So therefore, the Rabbi says, David, as Basheva Ishtoyin, he says he comforted his wife. In Cain, there was nothing left after that. He said, you know what? He had 7 days for a relationship with it. With this young child. That's a very long time, but it's nothing. And he knew the child was going to die. David HaMelech could prepare himself. This is his firstborn son. He brought him up. He took him to the Little League games. He taught him how to ride his bike. Everything, all the way through his entire life. He was the crown prince. This David HaMelech put all his hopes, all his energies into this child. And such an unnatural, terrible death. That scar would never go away. Right? You can't compare, as you were just saying a moment ago, you can't compare that child that he lost in youth, Rachman Nisan, and the child he lost when this was a fully formed man, a person who he had a real relationship with. So just to appreciate this over here, the Tanakh isn't smoothing over this. The Tanakh is emphasizing that David HaMelech could never, there's such a deep, deep scar and pain over here, David HaMelech could never really escape this. Esther.
So here we're saying he's mourning over Amnon, not Absalom.
Yes. So the Mefarshim all seem to say that it's Amnon. I just want to point out that was my own point, is that it seems to be that there is an ambiguity in the set, and that ambiguity points towards the fact that it's a complex relationship with the two of them. Yes.
The fact that Absalom killed him also, I think, makes it so much worse.
Yes.
Like, you know, in a way, the whole situation is really worse.
Nachon.
It's not just that he
Nachon. Yeah, because you know, it's when you hear these terrible, terrible things like that go on, a lot of times some people take solace, not the family usually, but a lot of people take solace in getting the perpetrator. You know, like sort of taking justice on whoever else was involved, you know, Rachman Nisan, if it's a car crash or whatever thing is, people go try to, they feel like there's a certain sense of, that they can achieve something by doing this. Here, there's no way out. If he's seeking retribution, it's hurting. If he's not seeking retribution, it's hurting. Right? Whichever way, there's no practical outcome that David HaMelech can exert. That makes them all the more complex. Which leads us, actually, to the last phrase in this perek, which is very, very important. And that is to try to understand what's going on in David HaMelech's mind. We're told, let's just quickly look at these psukim here. The last pasuk in Lamentos is Vatachal David HaMelech Lotzeis El Avshalom. And after these 3 years, he stops. He ends going after Avshalom. That's how the parak ends. And then listen to the beginning of the next parak. The next parak begins with the words. Let's take a quick look over here. And Yoav, his general, knows that his heart is about Avshalom. So we have to try to work out. He's stopped going after Avshalom, but Yoav can see his heart is still after Avshalom. This is very real. This is very real. What's going on in David HaMelech's mind over here? What is really happening in his mind? So before we get to the rest of the psukim, let's try to understand this. The Masura says, now, what does it mean that Yoav looks at him and he sees that his heart was to Avshalom? Take a quick look at the Metzuras over here. I put it into source 30. It says like this: V'yoda Avshalom hikir v'amelech asher liboy toiv al Avshalom. He sees that there's an opening. He sees there's a window. The king loves Avshalom. So what does it mean? His heart is with Avshalom. It means endearment, love. There's still something left. There's still a flickering flame. Which is why Yoav is about to take action, because he's going to try to use this moment of opportunity to perhaps bridge their relationship. This is a positive thing that he's seeing in David HaMelech. However, the Mefarshim don't all agree.
Could be negative.
How could we? So let's frame it the opposite.
Still want to
do that. Good. So the other Mefarshim say no. That's not what's going on over here. The lave isn't a good lave. This is a bad lave. This is a negative emotion that Yoav is seeing. How so? Take a quick look at the Malbim. The Malbim actually happens to be quoting a section which Abarbanel is quoting, which he quotes from earlier Mepharshim. Very, very fascinating. By the way, it's fascinating. It's so interesting that Malbim patterns his pirush after Abarbanel in the sense that what he does is he first frames the sections. Then he has a series of questions, and then he goes through the section and explains how the questions are answered. So he does it. He frames it. In fact, in his introduction, he talks about how much he gains from the Abarbanel. But very rarely does he quote him by name, although so many times the Malbim actually matches up exactly with the Abarbanel. So it's just fascinating to watch as that develops. Nonetheless, so this Malbim is identical almost to the Abarbanel's own Chiddush later on, although he doesn't say it, just it's more succinct in the Malbim in this particular instance. So here's what the Malbim says. This is such a true dynamic of what's going on in the family. Source 31. Vatachal David. Pirush ha'ayfoidi. This is rather the earlier Pirush on the Tanakh. In fact, that's what Abarbanel quotes. So the Abarbanel is taking the Abarbanel's original source, and he's putting it over here. And he says, Sheshalosh shanim arishanim, Shisabel David albanoi. During those first 3 years, when it was still raw, it was still painful, Ratzo David tamid lotzeis el Avshalom. He had an urge to literally don his sword, you know, put his shield on and go off to actually go to Geshur and personally go and seek retribution from Avshalom. That was what the first 3 years were in expression. There was so much anger that David HaMelech was experiencing. To take revenge. But now, Ma'acha Ishtoi, Ma'acha his wife. Who is Ma'acha again? Avshalom's mother, David HaMelech's wife. By the way, generally important rule is if the country was run by a woman, there would be a lot fewer problems, right? So generally speaking, I was at APAC last week, and I was so inspired by many, many people. But one was there was Senator Max Sally, and I'm trying to remember her counterpart, a Democrat Republican, both veterans from the active military duty, and both across the aisle talking about the military needs and defense needs of the country of Israel. And I thought, you know, here you go. Here you have people who have experience in the field, right? Who can work in a bipartisan way in Congress. This is the kind of leadership countries really need. And so Mach is kind of doing the background scenes over here. David HaMelech, don't. This is not going to help, right? So Mach is trying to ameliorate over here. Or Tamar. So we don't hear so much about Tamar, but maybe she's the one over here, because why? Think about this. David HaMelech is seeking retribution now for the death of Amnon. Tamar, the actual sister of Avshalom, is the one who's trying to now also ameliorate. Right? Don't kill Avshalom on this. Kol sa'es David, and that's what it means to say, to finish David, milashon kala, atachal po'el yotzei. So he says, therefore, what happened? It ended, he kalam inam es David, milotzeis el Avshalom el Ashiva el Amisai. So they prevailed. David did not go and marshal the army to go to seek revenge. Yan ra'asa ki nicham al Amnon, matzachayel limnoa es David milared fo'od. And they were able to prevail upon him to comfort him about Amnon. However, beginning of the next parak, the Malbim continues. Leiv HaMelech al Avshalom in source 32. Rotzel Amar, shenoter alav eva. He still is still brooding. The pot's still on the fire. And that's why Yoav cannot approach him directly. Meaning, Yoav sees that actively David HaMelech is not picking his sword up off its scabbard on the wall every morning. But he can still see that there's a cloud over David HaMelech's head. Which means, what's Leiv HaMelech al Avshalom mean? That his heart, even though his actions aren't there, his heart is still boiling. There's something, there's a pain which is too deep to, perhaps the actions could be voided, but not necessarily his emotions. This is the opposite to what the Metzudos was saying. The Metzudos was saying, no, he loves him. Therefore, opportunity to bridge. The Abarbanel, the Malbim, and the Ephodi, who is being quoted over here, saying, no, there's still so much pain that needs to be affected. So what does Yoav do? Yoav jumps into action and performs a very covert operation. We're going to have to think as we learn about this, whether or not this is a good or bad plan. That's just, okay, because Tanakh is not going to judge for us, but it is worthwhile trying to appreciate what's really going on over here. Here's what Yoav does. Let's look back in the actual text, Perek Yodalet Pasuk Beis onwards. Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa, vayikach misham isha chachama. He goes to the area of Tekoa. He finds a very wise woman. Vayomer elea, his ablino, velivshi no bino big da evil, vatosuchi shemen. Please go and wear sackcloth, don't anoint yourself and be like a woman in mourning. By the way, if you go to the Gemara in Moed Katan, a lot of the halachas of, or not a lot, but there's a number of laws of mourning which is learned from this pasuk, because the Tanakh is describing practices of mourners, so therefore we learn some of the halachas of mourning from here. Yes?
Don't some say that this was
So I'm actually not familiar with that, but I'm very fascinated to find out. Okay, it's very possible because I'm not familiar. I'd have to look a little further. But let's go further. So uvas el melech v'dibart elav kidvay kedavar azev v'yasam yoav es advarim el b'fiya. So he gives a whole plan to her, and this is what she's going to say. Okay, so now in she walks. So this is quite something. Let's try to get a sense of the whole cadence of this conversation, and then we'll look at some of the details. So she seeks counsel. She enters the king's chambers. She comes in. She bows down. She prostrates herself. Please save me, O king. What's going on? I'm a widow. My husband has passed away, which is potentially maybe the mourning. But there's more to this. By the way, it seems by the fact that she's answering aval, but it sounds like she is in the defensive, meaning she's acting in such a way that David Melech seems to automatically question why she's here. So she's saying no, aval, but I am in the situation. And to your servant, to your maidservant, there are two sons. Both of them fought in the field. And there was no one to stop the fight. One of the brothers, one of my sons, killed the other son. So the rest of the family says, there's a murderer. We need to take to judgment the murderer. Let's take him to judgment and kill him. Even that one who should inherit. And she says, and what am I going to do? I'm going to be left without a husband and without any children. And there'll be no one to continue the family name. The whole family will have disappeared in terms of a lineage. That's... So yeah, so hang on. So let's go a little further. So Melech says, "Vayamer Melech Elisha." So he says to her, not necessarily. Well, let's see how this goes. Vayamer Elisha, and he says to the woman, "Lechila ve'seich v'ani atzaveh alayich. You go home. I'll take care of you. I'll contact you." She says she's not taking that. She's not interested in that. Vatomer Elisha to koyis al Melech. Alay Adoni Melech Elvon al beis avi ha Melech kichisoy naki. No. If you take drastic action, I will take responsibility of that drastic action. And you'll be knaki, but you need to do something. She says, it's not enough just to passively sit by. We'll see what the conversation was in a moment. He says, bring those who are threatened by, and I'll make sure they don't affect you. Vatomer yizkono ha-melech, ez Hashem lokecho meharbas goel dom l'shaches v'leyashmirus b'ni. Says so you need to remember that the Goel Adam, the redeemer of the blood, that means the remaining family members who wanted to kill the murderer, should be prevented from doing so. Vayomer Chai Hashem Yimipol Masaras B'neich Arza, and David HaMelech swears by the name of Hashem that her child, her remaining child, should not be hurt. Vatomer Ha'isha V'tadaber No Shifchosecho El Adoni HaMelech Davor, and she says, now can I just say one thing to you? Vayomer Daberi. He says, okay, you can speak. And that's when she's about to let loose what she really wants to say. But before we get to that, let's just think about this. This is a complex conversation. There's a complex conversation going on over here. The first thing is, it is interesting that Yoav does not go himself. He doesn't say, you know, David, why don't we go have coffee? And one day he says, you know, David, I can see that you still have issues with Avshalom. Why don't we talk it out? What do you think? So Yoav does not feel he can do this. Part of that could be the tragedy, in the sense that there's very little communication. in this whole area of Tanakh. And perhaps the conversation is the difficulty. The Malbim argues the reason he couldn't over here was because he sees that it's something in David HaMelech's heart, which means his actions aren't displaying, but he can see the way, he can see the posture, he can see the way David HaMelech walks, he can see the groans between sentences, that there's still that pain there. And so David HaMelech, even if he's going to have a conversation, David HaMelech can still deny it. So David HaMelech can still say, no, I'm over that, it's all right. But he won't be able to get down to it. He needs to be able to unfurl David in a way that David HaMelech is caught unaware of it.
You think about the relationship between the two of them. There is a history he's not going to listen to him.
He might as well, you're right. So it's complicated history. One thing we do see over here about this relationship is that Yoav is the ultimate David, advocate. Mm-hmm. He will do anything for David HaMelech. And sometimes those anythings are bad things. Mm-hmm. But he'll do anything to preserve David HaMelech. And that's what he seems to be doing here. Yes.
A given expression, but I was wondering if it was like a nivav lo yadamani nivav when he says, "Well, you pull me sarat roshach artzav."
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting point. Avshalom ultimately, when Avshalom will be later killed by Yoav himself, he'll be killed with his hair caught in a tree, and none of his hair will ever touch the ground. So that is a very interesting point which you're raising. I don't want to be a spoiler, but there's much more complicated things going on in between here before that happens. But let's just focus on a few things. First of all, Tekoa doesn't appear too many times in Tanakh. It's an area in the Shomron. And what we see is an interesting thing. The Gemara tells us an interesting thing. What was the main product of Tekoa? The Gemara tells us it's olive oil. Fascinating, right? So the Gemara actually makes note of that in Source 33 and says, in the Gemara Menacha, it's stuff, pay hey Amud Beis, Vayishlach Yov Tekoa, Vayikach Misham Isha Chachama, Mashna Tekoa, why Tekoa of all places? Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mitoich Shiriginin B'Shemen Zayis Chochma Mitzuyah Bohem. Oil is always a symbol of wisdom, whether that means to say nutritionally value or whether it means to say symbolically, metaphorically. We know that the menorah was always seen as a symbol of wisdom, which is why when we daven, even though we daven to the, when you're facing the west, actually, when you're in the Beis HaMikdash, Harotzo Sheyachkim Yadrim, the person who wants to become wise should face the south a little bit because that was the area towards which the menorah was facing, pivoting just ever so slightly in that direction. It's always seen as a symbol of wisdom, so that's why he's going to this place. He needs somebody who can think on her feet. What he also seems to be doing is he seems to be getting somebody over here who represents something that David HaMelech can also feel, right? So she is in Avelos. So David HaMelech can feel there's a natural sense of empathy that is created over here, which he seems to be creating. You see a few other interesting things that are going on over here. First of all, is you see in this episode I'm just trying to think which is the best place to start over here. Let's see. Here we go. So you see an interesting thing. Here you have a person. It seems that the mashal is similar, right? So it seems that the mashal is similar. David HaMelech has two children, right? And the one killed the other child. So there's the Amnon and the Avshalom. And then there's the rest of the family who's asking for the death of the other one. And so he's accusing David, by implication, of being like the rest of the family, who's going to leave the mother, going to leave the family bereft of inheritance. The only thing which is complex over here is the following. David HaMelech has already been down this road before. Why? Because this is not the first time that somebody has approached him with a mashal, which has actually been turned around on him. The first time we saw this was when Nathan HaNavi comes along and presents the mashal about the two shepherds. And in that case, David HaMelech implicates himself by saying that Yamus, that the person should die, and ultimately this actual situation is a function of that. So David HaMelech has been down that path beforehand. The interesting thing is that the common thread between the two of them is that that David HaMelech is always the champion of victims. Is that interesting? David HaMelech is always the champion of the underdog, and both Nathan and Yoav are using that. They know that David HaMelech will always champion the poor shepherd who has the sheep taken, and will champion the poor almana, the poor widow in this case, who has the child who is under threat. So that's how they both framed. The difference seems to be the following, and that is that here, in the case of Nathan and Navi, the messenger ultimately is God, giving a message to David, asking him to be a better, what? To act more as a better human being, right? Meaning, here you write, meaning you say, you are not acting socially correctly. So that God is sending a message to David through this medium, which is going to be which is that you need to act in a better way. However, here it's not the case. Here you have a human being sending him a message. And what is the message actually really asking him to be? Now let's think about this. Is Avshalom liable for murder? The answer is yes, he is. And in a human court, he would be put to death. Which means, let's just think about this for a second. What she is really asking of him is to act from a divine perspective, meaning be like Hashem, right? Be a little more. So which means, just hang on for a second. Let's just think what's happening here. These are the opposite movements. We have the exact opposite going on. One is Hashem asking David HaMelech to act better in the human realm. And now you have a human being asking David HaMelech to act more almost in a divine realm, if you think about this. That's a very big difference. Is she correct? Not clear if this is correct in this. Dina, yes.
Is it like Cain and Abel?
Okay, good. So let's go into a few, just once over time, Dina, because you're right. This is the patterns. You're right. So now, let's open this up. It happens to be that there, as we're about to see it, as Dina's pointing out, she seems to also be referencing another episode in Tanakh. And that is that we know of an episode in Tanakh where there were two sons who are brothers in a field, and the one brother kills the other brother. And what happens is, and that was where ultimately Cain and Hevel, the second generation, the first murder. So what she's essentially doing is she's saying, let's take the archetype, let's take the fractal of the first murder and apply it to this case. So now let's put the parts back together for a moment. So if that's true, who had mercy on that remaining son? God had mercy on that remaining son. So what she's saying, you should be godlike. That's what she's ultimately saying now, which means which is a very high demand for him. So she's saying, you should allow your son to ultimately to succeed and live like Hashem allowed and protected Cain to live. That's a very, very high demand that she's making of David HaMelech.